We have former mayor of the Douglas Shire, Mike Berwick, in the studio. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Okay, you haven't got your green collar shirt on, I notice.
No, I don't wear uniforms.
You don't wear... Well, you're on the website of Green Collar, wearing the green collar.
Yeah, photo shoot.
Photo shoot.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, but let's, first of all, before we get stuck into this, first up, why do you think this is a good investment by the Douglas Shire Council and their, or via their ratepayers?
Well, I think it's a fantastic investment. The idea has been around for a long time. The world needs to go carbon neutral. Australia's policy is a little bit behind the scenes compared to the rest of the world, but councils all over the world are going waste neutral, carbon neutral. This is quite a common thing. State governments are setting targets for when they go carbon neutral. This will be a long-term project. This isn't a short-term project. So, and in a shire like Douglas, where our tourism industry, our main industry, is built on the environment, having good environmental credentials has been really important. And it has been, you know, for the last 30 years, this shire welcomed World Heritage listing when everyone else rejected it. Well, who would turn that back now? It was controversial, much more so than this ever was. So was the Bloomfield Road. So was buying back land north of the Daintree. So was setting a fixed urban footprint. These are the things that have set Douglas Shire aside as one of the greenest councils in Australia and also one of the most successful tourism industries, because people come here to see the environment. They want to know it's in good shape. So it's done us really well. And okay. This is another example of that kind of initiative.
Okay. This idea that council voted on, who came up with it originally?
Well, I'd love to think it was me, and everyone's accusing me of being me, but I don't think I can take that credit. It's been around for a long time.
No. But whose idea, individual person who went, the light bulb moment to say and suggest it to council, who was that?
Oh, I don't think you can pin that down to anybody. Well,
yeah, why can't you pin it down?
Because it
must
was
have
talked
been somebody's
about,
idea.
It was talked about when I was in council
years ago.
Whoa, you let me talk now. We talked about it in council when I was in council and council didn't want to do it. Whose idea was it? I'm not sure. I'd be delighted if it was mine. I'd be proud of it, but I'm not sure if it was. Before the election, the conservation group asked all the councillors if they'd support a carbon neutral shire, and 4 out of the 5 of them said yes. So it's been around. The role I played in this was bringing Green Collar and Qantas to the table to add value.
Yes.
To a project like this, not initiating it.
But who was the person who brought it to the Douglas Shire Council this time?
This time?
Hmm.
Oh, the Douglas Shire councillors themselves.
But somebody must have suggested it to them.
It was before the election. It was published and the councillors agreed to do it.
But who approached them from Green Collar?
Me approached them from Green Collar.
So I added...
to what they had already agreed to do. And that's a really important distinction.
No, I agree with you. But Green Collar, they are the people getting the ratepayers' dollars.
Okay, I'll tell you what Green Collar is and what they do. I'm an advisor to Green Collar. And my job is talking to farmers, graziers, industry groups, local governments, science communities, NRM groups up and down the coast about environmental markets. And environmental markets are both carbon credits and water quality credits.
Yep.
I've talked to the Tableland Council about something similar, but a different twist on it, for example, and still am. So that's my job. So one of the projects that I proposed with Green Collar is, hey, council wants to do this, we can help. Green Collar is...
Let me get this right, because I think this is important and the ratepayers need to know this. So council approached Green Collar. Green Collar didn't approach council.
No, it wasn't like that at all.
Well, what was
the
it
The
councillors like?
Were talking about this project and Green Collar said, hey, we can help you deliver this.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, where did they hear it? I mean, how did the germ of this idea start?
Don't you realise it was published before the election and the councillors all agreed to do it? I mean, for goodness
published
sake.
Published where?
In the Gazette. There was a question there. Let me just go through
what this.
What
was the question? It said, we're going to spend ratepayers' money with Green Collar and Qantas.
The question was, and I'll get you a copy of the actual publication, because what happened is... The conservation group here, Douglas Shire Sustainability Group, asked the prospective councillors a bunch of questions before the elections. One of them was, do you support making this shire carbon neutral? Four of the five councillors in council now said yes, and Michael Kearse didn't say yes, but he said he thought it was a good idea. So the questions were published in the first place. The answers to those questions were published in the Gazette before the election.
So you're saying that there was actually public consultation on this?
It was more than public consultation. It was a commitment. It was an election commitment by councillors to do it.
All right. Well, hang on. I dispute you on that.
Well, have a look at the Gazette.
Wait a minute. No, I've got it all in front of me here. You know, I dispute you on that this was public consultation about this particular project. It was public consultation about carbon credits, ecology, the environment. Let me tell you what happened. Three councillor workshops, 22nd of January 2019, 20th of November 18, 23rd of January 2018, a dedicated sustainability workshop was run on the 10th of May where the model was presented to local businesses, not-for-profits and government agencies. Now, this was shared. Let me tell you where it was shared. It was shared with 13 Douglas Shire tourism operators on the 3rd of October 2018. Meetings were led by Mayor Julia Loy and aimed to gauge interest in carbon neutrality and the wider partnership objectives. So a select bunch of operators for a start, not every business and not in the wider community, that is the ratepayers were excluded. This was an exercise that kept the general community in the dark about what was going on in the council. It was a select bunch of people. The only information that was held afterwards was Tourism Port Douglas Daintree put on an information for businesses that were invited, and only a handful turned up anyway, probably about five people from the north of the river. So to say there was, I think it's muddying the waters to say there was consultation on this very issue. There was consultation on carbon credits, absolutely. But not on this project.
No, not on carbon credits, ongoing carbon neutral.
Or carbon neutral credits.
Well, that's a big difference.
Well, carbon neutral, you need credits.
Well, a combination of savings and credits,
yeah.
Correct.
So would you agree that there was no public consultation on this to the general public about this particular green collar Qantas thing?
Yes.
Thank you. Because a lot of people have been painting this picture that that was the situation. So, okay,
hang on. I just need to add a little bit to that,
sure,
if I may.
Sure.
So it's not unusual for a project that's under $200,000 for council to consult on all of those things. They just don't do
under
that.
$200,000. So you know the amount. So
well, it's
under
$200,000. Well, it's less than half a percent.
I've estimated $170,000 per year.
Okay.
Am I close?
You are. It's a relatively small amount in a $45 million budget. It is not normal for council to consult on every footpath, on every road, on every initiative that they do. You first of all have to get your act together and say, what's this thing going to look like? And that is still under development because there are various aspects of it that are not yet finalised. And you have to develop that, and you do that with your partners in tourism, in farming. I mean, the TPDD does represent the tourism industry here. I mean, for goodness sake, if a council tried to consult on every time they spent that kind of money, people would go nuts. What they have done, though, is they have consulted on a corporate plan, and people have put economy and environment and tourism right at the top of the list. And this delivers on all of those things. So, I mean, you can't go around and consult on every little thing council does. Those people are voted in to govern on a particular platform, and they have to do that. And there will be heaps of public consultation and debate about how these things unfold. This is going to go for the next 20, 30 years. This isn't an overnight thing. This is step one of a council doing what they committed to do before the election.
All right, let's find out a little bit more about Green Collar, because I don't know heaps about it. I know probably a little more than the ratepayers because I've done a bit of research on it. But what is Green Collar? Now, you're a paid employee of
Correct.
Green Collar, aren't you? So what is Green Collar?
Green Collar's a company in environmental markets. They initially started off in carbon credits. They're the biggest supplier of Australian carbon credit units in Australia. So they're bigger than most of the other companies put together. So they're quite successful, and hence they're in partnership with people like Qantas. I'm employed as an advisor, and my job is to go around and talk about not just carbon credits, but reef credits. Reef credits are a new product that Green Collar dreamt up and are like a carbon credit for water quality and are there to deal with the other issue threatening the reef, which is water quality. So water quality and climate change are the two things hurting the reef at the moment. There's no argument about that. Or if there is, then there's no point in talking about this. So I guess I'm talking to people who accept that climate change, human-induced climate change, is a problem, that the reef is in trouble from climate change and it's in trouble from water quality. And we all need to do something about that. So there's a premise. So what Green Collar came up with this water quality credit, or reef credit as we've called it, is to say, this is a way of paying farmers to and graziers and landowners and councils to improve water quality. We will actually pay you. But it's not just give you a grant and hope for the best, which is the way it's normally done. It's to say we will pay you for a measured, verified, audited outcome. After you've done the deed.
Right.
So for that, you have methodology. So let's just go back to carbon credits for a minute. There's a very big transaction cost and a lot of, I suppose, measurement and verification and auditing to make sure these things are real. And that's set up by the Australian government. So although our carbon climate policy is not that crash hot, we have some of the best carbon accounting in Australia. It's called National Carbon Offset System, which sets a standard to how you measure carbon, whether it's in trees or soil.
So it's all on the up and up.
It is on the up and up, and it's on the up and up globally. So Green Collar ventured out and said, we would like to set up an environmental market whereby the private sector, the public sector, the philanthropists can invest in an outcome that helps the reef's water quality once it's delivered, measured, and verified. That has never been done before. So, for example, I'm talking to about 80 cane farmers up and down the coast who are interested in signing up to a project like this by which they change their practices in a way that reduces sediment, pesticide, and nitrogen loss to the reef. And for that, they get rewarded in terms of the quantum that they reduce.
Okay.
It's an environmental market. That's what they are.
But the farmers down there, where we've done this with the Douglas Shire Council, is 1,500 k's from us, 400 inland from Bundaberg. And any water quality would be helpful to the reef that end, but it does bugger all for the reef here.
Well, let's talk about two things. That's a carbon credit more than it is a water quality credit.
Yeah, well, let's stick to the carbon credit because that's what we're talking about today.
So let's understand the issues about carbon credits. For most carbon project developers such as Green Collar, to be viable, you need about 10,000 tonne project at a time. And for that reason, all of the carbon credits in Australia are west of the range, except for the ones that Green Collar is just starting to get east of the range. And that's because land's cheap, you get big areas, and it stacks up economically. It's an economic decision for a landowner. It's nothing more, nothing less, that we will either leave some trees there that we had a permit to clear, or we'll let it regrow, or we'll plant it, or whatever. And you get big numbers out there, and it stacks up. The reason no project developer has ever come to the coast is because land blocks are small, projects are not viable unless you get a large number of them and aggregate them, and it's not cost competitive compared with the normal economic agricultural activity, because a carbon credit is an agricultural commodity just like sugarcane or cattle or anything else. It's just another commodity. It's an environmental commodity that people
pay for. It just floats about the place.
Yeah, but it's a commodity nevertheless.
It's a commodity. So, but can I just pick up on that? It's a commodity, but all it does is mask a situation. For example, if we say that we...
I haven't finished really describing how this works. Do you mind if I do?
No, but can I just make this point while you're at this? You're talking about particular carbon credits on a council. But surely... And you're talking about what carbon credits are. But surely they're a Band-Aid. Because what happens is you buy these, you make Douglas Shire Council carbon neutral by buying a certain amount of these things, but the pollution is, it doesn't change from any day. It's the same today as it was yesterday. So
I can explain.
You take
that.
My point?
I do.
Go.
And it's been a long-standing issue.
Sure.
The world scientists, though, agree that if we're going to meet the Paris targets or any other targets, we have to do two things. Number one, we have to stop carbon going up there, and that always has to be the primary agenda. Number two, we have to drag carbon out of the atmosphere that's already up there. And everybody knows that you won't get there without doing both. Now, as time goes on and people get access to technologies which allow them cost-effective renewable energy supplies, they'll need offsets less and less, and eventually they won't need any. In the meantime, though, we have to drag carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Now, a tonne drawn out of the atmosphere is exactly the same as a tonne put into the atmosphere, assuming your accounting's correct. And it's very good in Australia. So you do need both. And a lot of places, say an airline or a boat going to the reef, has no viable alternative at the moment, and the only way they can reduce their footprint is through offsets. Other people, like electricity suppliers, already stopping using coal because it's cheaper to do renewables, so they're just going that way anyway. And it doesn't matter what the Australian government does, the energy sector, electricity sector, will go renewable of its own accord. Transport, air travel, they've got a bigger challenge, so if they want to reduce their footprint, they have no choice at the moment except to do offsets. And what offsets does is it gives them incentive to start reducing their footprint, which they do. So offsets are, I suppose, they're big in the immediate term, and as time goes on, they'll get less and less important. But offsets have got another advantage that a straight reduction doesn't. They have a co-benefit, what we call a co-benefit. They restore a landscape. They fix up a wetland. They put trees back on a waterway. So they have enormous co-benefits, and that's what we're talking about here.
So farmers down there don't cut down the trees. That way it helps with the atmosphere and
of course
the CO2.
It does. And it doesn't matter whether you do it in China, Africa, yeah, or Australia. It's the same atmosphere.
Yeah, I'm not against it per se. What the scheme is, I'm not really against that. What I'm trying to find out off you today is why the hell didn't we do something?
And
in
that's
the
what
Douglas...
I was trying to explain when you asked me to divert
well,
it from that.
Tell me.
So we will have carbon projects in Douglas Shire.
Why didn't we start there?
Because no one was going to put the effort into doing those until we knew if this scheme got off the ground. And I'll tell you the reason for that. A single project in here will never be viable on its own because you need, say, for council's carbon footprint, 6,000 tonnes approximately, it's probably going to take 500 to 1,000 hectares of trees to offset just the council's footprint. There will never be enough land in the Douglas Shire to offset the footprint of this tourism. Let me finish.
I'll let you finish.
So you will always need other offsets beside that to meet the pollution targets for people to go carbon neutral. And we are working hard to get some in the Douglas Shire, and we will get some. So that's no problem. But there are none here at the moment. If we planted trees tomorrow, and hopefully we will be the next day, figuratively speaking, soon, they will take 3 or 4 years before they start to accumulate any carbon. So even if you started a project now, you couldn't offset it because there's no carbon there until the trees get a bit of size on. That's pretty obvious stuff. So if council wanted to wait a few years before it went carbon neutral, sure, it could start a project here and it could do it. Number one, it would be lucky to get a project big enough to do the... No way can it do the toll tourism industry. You can probably offset the council one okay here. But the tourism industry, no chance. And I think the places that will go are places like the Tableland and within the region,
yep,
where people can relate to it and where they can see to it. And I understand that's important for the tourism industry. Because these projects are not viable on their own, there was no way that Green Collar or anyone else was going to waste their time chasing a whole lot of projects if this thing wasn't going to get off the ground, because it's just not commercially
viable. So there's not enough trees in the Douglas Shire anywhere for us to have done this scheme?
Well, there's a lot of trees in the Douglas Shire. It's 80% World Heritage listed, but you've got to understand that you get no credits for standing vegetation. The rules of the game for carbon are it's additional vegetation. So if you've got a patch of rainforest in your backyard and it's protected, as most is, sorry, you can't get any credits for that. It's an international rule. It's called the additionality rule. It's got to be business addition
okay,
as usual.
Okay, that's great. We've got Mike Berwick, a former mayor and also a paid employee of Green Collar that will benefit from this particular carbon neutral decision made by council. Can I ask you how... first of all, will you be paid for this? Will you get a bonus? Will you get any money?
No, I'm on a salary. And
will
like
you get
I say,
any extra money?
No, none at all.
None
zero.
At all?
Absolutely zero.
Zero.
I just on a wage, and I do this as part of my life all up and down the coast with all organisations.
No bonus?
No bonus.
Okay. All right, no bonus. Now, Green Collar, can you explain to the ratepayers how the money received from council, and I estimate around $170,000, how will that money, when it gets paid to Green Collar, how is that money distributed? I take it...
It doesn't get paid to Green Collar.
Who's it get paid to?
Qantas. So
Qantas gets the money first, you're saying?
Correct. And Qantas uses Green Collar for its offset. So the deal here is not... Green Collar's a secondary player in this. Qantas Future Planet is the biggest offsetter in the world. They run offsets for 20 or 30 other large companies who have a footprint on the same scale as Qantas does. It's huge.
So Qantas could give some of that ratepayer money back to Green Collar?
They will use Green Collar for their carbon projects, and they'll probably use other people.
Yeah, I understand
too.
So let's dissect this. You're saying Qantas gets paid the money from the Douglas Shire Council. The Douglas Shire Council then pays Green Collar.
Qantas plays Green Collar. Douglas Shire doesn't pay Green Collar.
Okay, so Qantas pays Green Collar. Qantas pays Green Collar. Where does that money go? Do directors get paid with some of that money?
No. I don't get paid for any of that.
So Well, how do the directors of this company get paid?
So the way all carbon projects work for Green Collar, and they're all the same, is let's say you have a carbon offset value to a farmer that's worth $100,000. That's the value of the carbon credits. Green Collar takes 30% of that, and the farmer gets 70%. For that 70%, the farmer has obligations like they've got to keep the stock out, let the trees grow, etc., etc. For Green Collar's role in that is that they set the thing up, they do the legals, they do the monitoring. They're on site four times a year. They measure the carbon, they find the markets, they pay the auditor, and they report back to government to make sure they're NCOS compliant and they deliver the outcomes. So that's the standard arrangement, and it's pretty... all project developers like us have some sort of standard arrangement.
Okay,
like
well, let's not skip over the 30% you say the Green Collar get paid. Okay, now I take it that's where the directors make their money, or anybody...
Well, that's where the company makes its money.
Correct, the company who then pay you a retainer.
Correct.
So, okay, let's work this out. If I'm saying about $170,000, then they're going to make... Green Collar are going to make about $51,000.
Out of that...
Roughly.
When you say make, it's not profit.
The company.
They will actually lose money on these small projects. Do you understand that?
They lose money? How can a company lose money?
I explained all that to you before, that to have a viable project, you generally need about 10,000 ton project on its own.
Yes.
10,000 tons.
So they're going to lose money on this Douglas Shire Council thing?
Correct.
They're going to lose money on it?
Yep.
What, are they doing it out of the goodness of their heart?
No. And the whole idea of this... No, of course they're not. They're a commercial company and they're in there to make money.
Why would they lose money on this?
Because Qantas and Green Collar believe this will scale up and take off up and down the coast and then they'll make money. This project is a loss leader.
A what?
A loss leader. It's not going to make any money.
A loss leader? I've never heard that term before.
Yeah, well, they're going to... Well, you've heard it now. So it means that they're going to invest money in this project, which will not earn them any money, but in the long term, if this gets up and other regions do the same, then they'll start to make their money. So they're taking a risk just like they did with reef credits when they started that off.
Yep.
They haven't made a cent out of that yet.
Yes.
And it'll be another year or two before they make a cent out of it. So they'll spend a few million bucks in the lead up to get this whole system up and running, the governance, the oversight, the measurement, the methodologies, the engagement, the farmers, the legal side of it. Been going for 2 or 3 years now. It's a big investment.
It's a big investment.
And it's a big risk.
And I take it that, Green Collar care about the environment.
Well, of course they do. Otherwise they wouldn't.
And they'd put every last cent into the environment, one would suspect. Yeah, well, can you explain?
They're a very responsible and ethical company.
Oh, good.
And I'm proud to be a member of them. And it's why I approached them and said, if you need someone with skills like mine, let me know, and I've got engaged as an advisor.
Okay.
And they're a pleasure to work with. They're an ethical company that uses their profits responsibly to do great things for the environment.
Responsibly they use their profits. Mike Berry, can I ask you then why Green Collar sponsors the Louth races near Bourke in New South Wales? Why they are the major sponsor of a horse racing meeting?
Because they have, if you go to Western New South Wales, as I have with Green Collar, that company is a hero out there because they've saved so many farmers from going to the wall through carbon projects. They were the first people out there. I've been to a meeting out at Louth, and it blew me away because we had all these crusty graziers, half of them didn't believe in climate change, and these hipsters from Sydney, smart, yeah, young professional people, and the graziers thought they were magnificent. Mm. They drove hundreds of kilometres to come to a Christmas party at Louth to catch up. Now, let me finish. Mm. So what the Green Collar does is it sponsors a whole lot of community events. The Louth races are the big deal in Louth. Yeah. They also sponsor Oxfam. They also give money to refugee advocates. They also do a whole lot of other things. So the reason they sponsor the races is because they are a part of that community. They are one of the biggest income sources to that community of a bunch of graziers who are really struggling and now are out of the woods because not only do they earn money from marginal sheep country or cattle country, they earn carbon credits. And it's got these guys over the line. And, you know, they're very popular with that industry out there. They are part of that community. It's so nice to go out to a place west of Bourke and
back of Bourke, yeah,
and find a place like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, why don't they sponsor the Ellora races up here instead of the Louth races? So ratepayers,
well,
some of the ratepayers' money is going to a race meeting in Bourke.
Oh, for God's sake. I mean, dear, oh dear, companies sponsor community events all the time all over the world, and to say that you're stealing Douglas Shire money to sponsor the Louth races has got to be a load of nonsense. As I said to you before, this project will not on its own earn money for Green Collar. It will only earn money if they get a lot of projects and they aggregate them into something large, which I haven't had a chance to explain to you yet. What you have to do to make a lot of small projects add up, you have to aggregate them. Now, when we get other places up and down the coast, and we have other councils wanting to do this now, and I'm sure it's going to take off amongst a number of other councils, for example, Noosa, Byron, Kangaroo Island, all sorts of places are expressing an interest in wanting to do something the same. Where Douglas gets the fantastic advantage here is we will be the first, we will be known as the first, Qantas and the tourism industry will promote us as the first, and this Shire will be out there in lights as doing something really positive for the reef and the atmosphere, and as a result of that, people who care about the environment will want to come and have a holiday here. It's a fantastic project, and it's absolutely beyond me why anybody would oppose it for a relatively small investment to get that much gain, and environmental gain with being carbon neutral, and tourism and industry gain about promoting the Shire. Mm.
Well, you were saying a relatively small amount, but $170,000 is a lot of money to a ratepayer.
I mean, no one complained when you spend that on a footpath or a road or a dog park or any of those sorts of things.
Don't bring up paws and claws, please.
Why not? You think climate change is less important than paws and claws?
No, but this is what was used against Michael Kerr when he stood up there to, you know, to vote against this.
It's only one example. Of course it is. It's his pet project, so he doesn't feel like he's got to go to public consultation.
But your council friends used that against him.
What do you mean used it against him? They drew a comparison.
Let's just take a step back again.
Okay, so council's
pretty ordinary behaviour.
No, well, I would say that Michael Kerr's behaviour by going out to the public, canning this process before it was even voted on, without knowing the answers to a lot of questions, and people like yourself asking a whole lot of questions.
Hang on. We shouldn't ask questions.
Of course you should ask questions.
Well, what do you say, people like me asking questions?
No, you're not listening to what I said. I'm listening.
I'm listening to what you said. No. Let me tell you what you just said. You just said people like you asking questions.
Yeah, but I didn't finish. Asking questions and canning the event before you got the answers to those questions, and you still don't have the answers to those questions, and you need to know them before you can can it.
Right.
For example, the local projects. What is involved in getting a local project up? How are they going? How long are they going to be? How much are we going to get? What's involved? It's not an easy job, and no one was going to go out and do that in a place like this for a bunch of unviable projects unless we knew this project was going to get up.
Well, you said
now Michael preempted it without himself knowing answers.
So did the mayor preempt it on this very program. So
yeah, but that's right to ask questions. I absolutely agree with you. It's your job to answer questions. It's why I'm here.
It's my job to ask questions.
You tipped the bucket on it, and so did other people before you knew the answer to those questions. Your questions are legitimate. Tipping the bucket on before you knew the answer to those questions is not legitimate.
I wouldn't have tipped a bucket unless I knew the answers.
Well, you didn't,
mate,
because you're asking me all the questions now, and I'm giving you some of them, and you didn't know what they were.
No, I'm asking the questions for ratepayers. Hey, listen, I'll give you a little tip. Mike, in journalism and interviewing, I've been in the game 53 years, right? Don't ask a question unless you know the answer. All right, so I know the answers to these questions. I'm asking them on behalf of the ratepayers, so let's get that straight.
But you didn't know the answer to how carbon credits work in this shire, or their viability, or their size.
Who said I didn't? I just asked you to explain it to the ratepayers. How do you know I don't know that?
Well, that answers the question about why we don't have any projects here now.
Does it?
Absolutely it does.
All right. What about the cane growers? In the future, could have trees growing, couldn't they? On properties. What about people in the, say, Daintree, north of the river?
We've got a couple of projects on the go there now that I think will get up. But remember these...
You talk about all this wonderful stuff of carbon credits and neutral and all of that stuff, and yet you're against the carbon grid up there, the hydrogen thing.
Let's stick to one issue at a time.
But I think it goes to sort of you're really spouting all of this stuff about carbon credits, but when it comes to a clean green situation in the north of the river up there in the Daintree, you're against that.
I don't believe it's clean or green, and so we'll come back to that you want to. But let's talk about, you said, are there no projects in the Daintree? Yes, there are. We're dealing with a number of landowners here. Those landowners don't want me sprouting their details in the media, and I'm not going to. It's a confidential arrangement. All of our commercial deals with any commodity is a commercial arrangement. And yes, I hope we can get some projects up in the Daintree that do rehabilitate landscapes that need it. Absolutely. We're on our way there. But the point I made before, there's a lot of effort in doing this, and no one was going to spend all their time doing it until we knew there was a project.
Okay. Mike, as soon as we sort of, we're locals now, and I say we're locals because we live here, you're not even a ratepayer, are you? You're not a ratepayer, are you?
Hey, I'm not prepared to talk about my personal stuff here. That's completely irrelevant.
Personal?
Well, what's it got to do with being a ratepayer or resident? I've lived here since 1979. I've been a ratepayer on and off all that time.
But you're not a ratepayer now. Are you?
I'm not prepared to talk about my personal details with you. That's got nothing to do with you or your listeners. And so what if I'm a ratepayer or a resident? What on earth difference does that make?
Well, I think it does make a difference because you are not a ratepayer, and yet this particular thing that you're involved with is affecting ratepayers.
Every year I pay rates, okay?
Stop slamming the desk. Will you stop doing that?
Every year I pay rates.
You pay rates where?
Correct.
Where?
To Douglasshire.
For what?
That's my business. It's got nothing to do
with you. It's a simple question. Are you a ratepayer?
I pay rates.
You pay rates, but you're not prepared to tell me.
No, I'm not. I'm not prepared to go into that crap. I mean, this personal attack stuff that's going on as to whether I own property or anything, I am absolutely not interested.
A personal attack? My goodness me, you're a bit of a drama queen there.
No, well, I think you're probably the drama queen.
Oh,
you're
am
making
I?
The attacks.
Okay. Well, listen, when I first arrived here in the Douglas Shire, the first thing that many people told me and still continue to tell me is that although you're not the mayor anymore, you pull the strings at the Douglas Shire Council. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's the most extraordinary bit of nonsense. I mean, for a start, is it surprising that the current mayor talks to the previous mayor? I would have loved to have talked to my previous mayor. He was a lovely guy, but he had the shits with me because I beat him in an election. But I would have loved to be able to talk to him and learn from him and listen. And of course, you take on board what you want to and what you don't.
So you two consult?
We talk on and off. We're friends. Absolutely, we talk. Do we consult?
Yeah.
That's a different issue.
Well, she sure likes you because Julia has often said you've done wonderful things for this show.
Yeah, well, I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, and she's really praised you. So I'm just wondering whether you consult and whether you say, Julia, this is a good way to go.
No, we talk about things. She asks my opinion of things. I give it to her. Sometimes she takes notice and sometimes she doesn't.
All right,
that's fine. Sure. That's pretty normal. You would do the same. You would lobby councillors or things that are precious to your heart, and if they take up your idea, that's great, and if they don't, they don't.
I don't lobby councillors because I'm in the media. I would like to have arm's length of that if I can.
Yeah, but you take a pretty strong opinion.
Well, yes, and I'm entitled to it.
So long as the opinion is separate from news and opinion are two separate things, and you need to know where the distinction is.
All right. Well, just thanks for giving me a lesson in journalism.
I've been a journalist too. I owned a newspaper for 20 years. I'm not new
to
it.
Okay. So tell me what you want to teach me.
I don't want to teach you anything. I just want to say that the separation between news and opinion is an important separation. And there's no problem with media having an opinion. I used to write an editorial in the Gazette every week when
I was
there.
There you go.
But it was either news or it was opinion.
Okay, well, when I give an opinion, I say it is my opinion. Right. When I do the news, I do the news. So I make it separate to that. So I don't know what your problem is. What's your problem?
My problem is the one that I raised with you, that you took a very strong opinion on this particular issue before you had answers to a lot of these questions.
Well,
and
see,
before anybody had answers to these questions.
I dispute you on that.
No one would have known those things because no one's told them.
You reckon you were a journalist. You ran the newspaper here, the Gazette, for a while, didn't you?
Correct.
Okay. Don't you know that you don't ask a question unless you know the answer to it? Yes or no?
No, absolutely not. Lots of questions. I had no idea what the answers
were.
Well,
I tell you what, most journalists, if they're in the middle of an interview, which I'm in at the moment talking to you, I have every question I ask, I know the answer to.
Oh, good.
I know the answer to, but I'm asking them on behalf of the ratepayers, that's all.
Yeah, I used to ask lots of questions. I had no idea what the answer was. That's what you do to find out things.
Hmm. Well, I do a bit of research before I do that interview.
Well, both. But yeah. You don't always know the answer till you ask an expert.
And you're the expert?
On this, yes.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I would just want to ask you about the way that I think council has approached this. First of all, behind closed doors in a meeting, which they only said it was...
No, you can talk to council about this, not to me. No, don't get me involved in this. You go and talk to council about how they do their consultation on this.
You and the mayor talk. I just wanted to get your opinion on this.
I'm happy to comment generally on consultation.
Sure. So closed doors, where they only said, look, it was about an investment opportunity. So that was the first time we heard about it, but it was behind closed doors. No public consultation on this very matter, as you admitted. Money spent where we don't know because Qantas supposedly don't want us to know the amount. Is there any transparency in this deal with Green Collar Qantas? Because to me, it doesn't look very transparent to me.
What is it that I haven't told you that's anything I've told you that's not transparent?
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about council, how they've gone about this.
Well, then go and talk to council about it. Don't talk to me about it.
You just said you'd give me an opinion on it. And what's your opinion? Being transparent? Is it past the pub test?
Absolutely. I mean, the same as so many other things. You elect a government to govern. And they don't consult on every little thing. They consult on the big picture. And the reason that councils have corporate plans, operational plans, sustainability plans is because they can't possibly consult on every bucket of money that's spent in a $45 million budget. So you consult on the big picture, you consult on the strategic direction, and then the council's job is to put that into action. And that's what they've done.
So
I applaud them for that.
So sometimes you don't ask the ratepayers, you just do it.
Correct.
Mm.
Roads are a classic example on this. When you build a road, you don't go to the ratepayers and say, which road would you like built?
Well, yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Well, you consult with the public when you're putting a new road in. You consult with them.
No, but what you do is the engineers come and say, this road has got this much use, this much wear and tear. We think this is economical to do it. And that's how the council spends its money on roads. Certainly the council will consult on the big picture and say, what are your priorities? And people will say, roads. Followed by economy, followed by environment, followed by tourism. So council will spend money accordingly. They will not consult on every little detail of everything they spend.
Mm.
And I would dispute with you that this is a secret deal. It is completely consistent with their corporate plan. It's consistent with their new corporate plan. It's consistent with what they got voted in for. And I have played a role in its actual delivery.
Mm. What do you think a council's core responsibilities are? Isn't it roads? Rubbish, rates, blah, 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 blah.
No, that went out 30 years ago. I mean, it did. Councils does far more than that. They do town planning. They do domestic animal control. They do weed management. They do community events. They do sporting. They do a whole host of things. And that idea of roads, rates and rubbish as council's only business went out with the dark ages. Councils do all sorts of things, and it's because communities want them to do these other things.
Yeah, but when you go out sort of outside that square with carbon credits, I think the ratepayers should be brought along with the journey, not sort of kept in the dark and gone, well, we're going to spend this money anyway.
Hey, wait a minute. The council is committed to doing this before the election. This is a long-term project that's going to go for many, many years.
Not at a forest 1,500 k's away, they didn't.
Look, you can go carbon neutral by buying credits in China, as Brisbane City Council has done. They say they're carbon neutral. They bought their credits in China, for God's sake. I don't think that's very good. But not because they're in China. I don't have a problem with that. But because they're not national carbon offset standard compliant.
Yeah, okay.
And are they real credits or not? That is the issue. Because a molecule of carbon dioxide that's here today will be in California in a week.
Yeah. But coming back to, now you've explained carbon credits to me. I understand what you're saying. But doesn't it, any of this carbon credit does mask a problem unless a council is ready to clean up themselves.
Well,
do you
agree
with that?
Yeah, yeah. Not mask a problem, no. Help them get carbon neutral, yes. As a short to medium term solution, yes. As a long term solution, everyone will have to stop polluting. Correct.
Absolutely. But wouldn't it be good to start in your own backyard before you go off onto these carbon credits with Green Collar and Qantas? Wouldn't it be good to do it in your backyard first?
Yeah.
Then why didn't they?
I just explained all that to you. Getting carbon credits here is difficult. The land holdings are small. The projects are not viable on their own. There's a huge amount of work in it. And no one was going to waste their time chasing carbon credits in a little tiny place like this unless they knew there was a project on. So there was always a commitment to chase local projects. Council's found a few. I've found a few. Other people have come forward a few. And they're going to turn into reality. They will. But if you want to be carbon neutral today, you cannot do it in the Douglas Shire, even if you start planting trees tomorrow. It'll be 3 or 4 years down the track before you'd be carbon neutral and to be able to make that claim. So one of the things driving council and the tourism industry was, hey, we want to be this first because there's other people interested in this, and this community will get the advantage by being the trailblazer on this subject. They'll get fantastic publicity.
Okay.
It'll go global.
Sure, sure. We might wrap this up now. But obviously, you are so passionate about this particular project.
I'm passionate about all things about the environment. I have been for 40 years. I got arrested 2 or 3 times on blockades. I've been the mayor. I've worked for an NRM group my entire life. Has been about the environment, and what I brought to this Shire was to change it radically. It boosted the economy. We turned the budget round into surplus. The place has thrived on the environment here. It's a fantastic thing, and this is a relatively green community.
Mm. Would you like to be mayor again?
No.
Why?
I've done my bit. I enjoy my job. I've got a boat. I'm going sailing. Thank you very much. And I don't want that commitment. I did 17 years as mayor. That was 5 terms. That was a pretty good commitment. And during that 5 terms, it was controversial the whole time. My vote went up with each election. Every election, I got a bigger vote, and I was very secure by the time I left. My agenda was well understood. It was supported. But I had decided I'm out of here.
Mm.
And after 5 terms, that's fair enough. Politics is a hard game.
Sure, it is a hard game. How do you think the election will go, Mike Berwick, next year, the council elections? What's your feeling, the pulse of the ratepayers at the moment?
I don't really know. Look, to be honest, I don't listen to the local media very much. I don't often read the Gazette. I don't often read Newsport. And most of the time away from home, doing other projects like this in different places. So I don't follow local politics except for this one issue, because it's my job.
Mm. Passionate about it, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, look, it's been cut and thrust. It's been good this morning. I've enjoyed this.
Good. So have I.
Well, thank you, Mike. I can only say thank you for coming in and copying the questions and giving me the answers.
And thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's Mike Berwick.